was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night falls in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie.
Resurrect Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Tom Lackabarre Stewart. I'm joined by Lori Anderson tonight. I want to start off tonight. We have a lot of things to talk about. A federal judge that smacked down the assault ban. Some laws that show fraud and some that show remedy. I also want to at some point speak about the validity of the 13th Amendment. And among some other things that I'm sure Lori would want to be talking about. But I want to share something with you just to provoke your mind just a little bit. Go ahead and roll.
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. We'll find out why in a moment.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in association with the Fund for the Republic, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels and social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. And Mr. Huxley, right off the bat, let me ask you this. As you see it, who and what are the enemies of freedom here in the United States?
Well, I don't think you can say who in the United States. I don't think there are any sinister persons deliberately trying to rob people of their freedom. But I do think, first of all, that there are a number of impersonal forces which are pushing in the direction of less and less freedom. And I also think that there are a number of technological devices which anybody who wishes to use can use to accelerate this process of going away from freedom, of imposing control.
Well, what are these forces and these devices, Mr. Hudson?
I should say that there are two main impersonal forces. The first of them is not exceedingly important in the United States at the present time, though very important in other countries. This is the force which in general terms can be called overpopulation, the mounting pressure of population pressing upon existing resources. This, of course, is an extraordinary thing. Something is happening which has never happened in the world's history before. I mean, let's just take a a simple fact that between the time of the birth of Christ and the landing of the Mayflower, the population of the Earth doubled. It rose from 250 million to probably 500 million. Today, the population of the Earth is rising at such a rate that it will double in half a century.
Well, why should overpopulation work to diminish our freedoms?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, the experts in the field, like Harrison Brown, for example, pointed out that in the underdeveloped countries, actually the standard of living is at present falling. The people have less to eat and less goods per capita than they had 50 years ago. And as the position of these countries, the economic position, becomes more and more precarious, obviously the central government has to take over more and more responsibility for keeping the ship of state on an even keel. And then, of course, you're likely to get social unrest under such conditions, with again an intervention of the central government. So that I think one sees here a pattern which seems to be pushing very strongly towards a totalitarian regime. And unfortunately, as in all these underdeveloped countries, the only highly organized political party is the Communist Party, it looks rather as though they will be the heirs to this unfortunate process, that they will step into the power, the position of power.
Well, then, ironically enough, one of the greatest forces against communism in the world, the Catholic Church, according to your thesis, would seem to be pushing us directly into the hands of the communists because they are against birth control.
Well, I think this strange paradox probably is true. It's an extraordinary situation, actually. I mean, one has to look at it, of course, from a biological point of view. The whole essence of biological life on Earth is a question of balance. And what we have done is to practice death control in a most intensive manner without balancing this with the birth control at the other end. Consequently, the birth rates remain as high as they were, and death rates have fallen substantially.
All right, then. So much for the time being, anyway, for overpopulation. Another force that is diminishing our freedoms.
Well, another force which I think is very strongly operative in this country is the force of what may be called over-organization. As technology becomes more and more complicated, it becomes necessary to have more and more elaborate organizations, more hierarchical organizations. And incidentally, the advance of technology has been accompanied by an advance in the science of organization. It's now possible to make organizations on a larger scale than was ever possible before. And so that you have more and more people living their lives out as subordinates in these hierarchical systems controlled by bureaucracies, either the bureaucracies of big business or the bureaucracies of big government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the devices that you were talking about, are there specific devices or methods of communication which diminish our freedoms in addition to overpopulation and over-organization?
Well, there are certainly devices which can be used in this way. I mean, let us take, after all, a piece of very recent and very painful history is the propaganda used by Hitler, which was incredibly effective. I mean, what were Hitler's methods? Hitler used terror on the one kind, brute force on the one hand, but he also used a very efficient form of propaganda, which he was using every modern device at that time. He didn't have TV, but he had the radio, which he used to the fullest extent, and was able to impose his will on an immense mass of people. I mean, the Germans were a highly educated people.
Well, we're aware of all this, but how do you equate Hitler's use of propaganda with the way that propaganda, if you will, is used, let us say, here in the United States? Are you suggesting that there is a parallel?
Needless to say, it's not being used in this way now. But the point is, it seems to me, that there are methods at present available, methods superior in some respects to Hitler's method, which could be used in a bad situation. I mean, what I feel very strongly is that we mustn't be caught by surprise by our own advancing technology. This has happened again and again in history. It technology has advanced and this changes social conditions, and suddenly people have found themselves in a situation which they didn't foresee and doing all sorts of things they didn't really want to do.
Well, now, what do you mean? Do you mean that we develop our television but we don't know how to use it correctly? Is that the point that you're making?
Well, at present, the television, I think, is being used quite harmlessly. It's being used, I think, I would feel it's being used too much to distract everybody all the time. But, I mean, imagine, which must be the situation in all communist countries, where the television, where it exists, is always saying the same thing the whole time, is always driving along. It's not creating a wide front of distraction. It's creating a one-pointed drumming in of a single idea all the time. It's obviously an immensely powerful instrument.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about the potential misuse of the instrument.
Exactly. We have, of course, all technology is in itself morally neutral. These are just powers which can either be used well or ill. It's the same thing with atomic energy. We can either use it to blow ourselves up, or we can use it as a substitute for the coal and the oil which are running out.
You've even written about the use of drugs in this light.
Well, now, this is a very interesting subject. I mean, in this book that you mentioned, this book of mine, Brave New World, I postulated a substance called Soma, which was a very versatile drug. It would make people feel happy in small doses. It would make them see visions in medium doses, and it would send them to sleep in large doses. Well, I don't think such a drug exists now, nor do I think it will ever exist, but we do have drugs which will do some of these things, and I think it's quite on the cards that we may have drugs which will profoundly change our mental states without doing us any harm. I mean, this is the pharmacological revolution which has taken place, that we have now powerful mind-changing drugs which, physiologically speaking, are almost costless. I mean, they are not like opium or like cocaine, which do change the state of mind, but leave terrible results physiologically and morally.
Mr. Huxley, in your new essays, you state that these various enemies of freedom are pushing us toward a real-life, brave new world, and you say that it's awaiting us just around the corner. First of all, can you detail for us what life in this brave new world, which you fear so much, what life might be like?
Well, to start with, I think this kind of the dictatorship of the future, I think will be very unlike the dictatorships which we've been familiar with in the immediate past. I mean, take another book prophesying the future, which was a very remarkable book, George Orwell's 1984. Mm-hmm. Well, this book was written at the height of the Stalinist regime and just after the Hitler regime. And there he foresaw a dictatorship using entirely the methods of terror, the methods of physical violence. Now, I think what is going to happen in the future is the dictators will find, as the old saying goes, that you can do everything with bayonets except sit on them. That if you want to preserve your power indefinitely, you have to get the consent of the ruled. And this they will do partly by drugs, as I foresaw in Brave New World, partly by these new techniques of propaganda. They will do it by bypassing the sort of rational side of man and appealing to his subconscious and his deeper emotions and his physiology even, and so making him actually love his slavery. I mean, I think this is the danger, that actually people may be in some ways happy under the new regime, but they will be happy in a situation where they oughtn't to be happy.
But let me ask you this. You're talking about a world that could take place within the confines of a totalitarian state. Hmm. Let's become more immediate, more urgent about it. We believe, anyway, that we live in democracy here in the United States. Do you believe that this brave new world that you talk about could, let's say, in the next quarter century, the next century, could come here to our shores?
I think it could. I mean, I that's why I feel it's so extremely important here and now to start thinking about these problems, not to let ourselves be taken by surprise by the new advances in technology. I mean, for example, in regard to the use of the drugs, we know there's enough evidence now For us to be able, on the basis of this evidence and using a certain amount of creative imagination, to foresee the kind of uses which could be made in by people of bad will with these things, and to attempt to forestall this. And in the same way, I think with these other methods of propaganda, we can foresee and we can do a good deal to forestall. I mean, after all, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
You write in Enemies of Freedom, you write specifically about the United States. You say this, writing about American political campaigns. You say, all that is needed is money and a candidate who can be coached to look sincere. Political principles and plans for specific action have come to lose most of their importance. The personality of the candidate, the way he is projected by the advertising experts, are the things that really matter.
Well, this is... during the last campaign, there was a great deal of this kind of statement by the advertising managers of the campaign parties, this idea that the candidates had to be merchandised as though they were soap or toothpaste, and that you had to depend entirely on the personality. I mean, the personality is important, but there are certainly people with an extremely amiable personality, particularly on TV, who might not necessarily be very good... positions of political trust.
Well, do you feel that men like Eisenhower, Stevenson, Nixon, with knowledge of forethought, were trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the American public?
No, but they were being advised by powerful advertising agencies who were making campaigns of a quite different kind from what had been made before. And I think we shall see probably... all kinds of new devices coming into the picture. I mean, for example, this thing which got a good deal of publicity last autumn, a subliminal projection. I mean, as it stands, this thing, I think, is of no menace to us at the moment. But I was talking the other day to one of the people who has done most experimental work in psychological laboratory with this, was saying precisely this, that it is not at the moment a danger, but once you've established a principle that something works, you can be absolutely sure that the technology of it is going to improve steadily. And I mean, his view of the subject was that, well, maybe they will use it to some extent in the 1960 campaign, but they will probably use it a good deal and much more effectively in the 1964 campaign, because this is the kind of rate at which technology advances.
And we'll be persuaded to vote for a candidate that we do not know that we are being persuaded to vote
exactly.
for.
Exactly. I mean, this is the rather alarming feature, that you're being persuaded below the level of choice and reason.
In regard to advertising, which you mentioned just a little ago, in your writing, particularly in Enemies of Freedom, you attack Madison Avenue, which controls most of our television and radio advertising, newspaper advertising, and so forth. Why do you consistently attack the advertising agency?
Well, no, I think that advertisement plays a very necessary role, but the danger, it seems to me, in a democracy is this. I mean, what does a democracy depend on? A democracy depends on the individual voter making an intelligent and rational choice for what he regards as his enlightened self-interest in any given circumstance. But what these people are doing, I mean, what both for their particular purposes, for selling goods, and the dictatorial propagandists are doing, is to try to bypass the rational side of man and to appeal directly to these unconscious forces below the surface, so that you are, in a way, making nonsense of the whole democratic procedure, which is based on conscious choice on rational grounds.
Of course, well, maybe you have just answered this next question, because in your essay, you write about television commercials, not just political commercials, but television commercials as such. And how, as you put it, today's children walk around singing beer commercials and toothpaste commercials. And then you link this phenomenon in some way with the dangers of a dictatorship. Now, could you spell out the connection, or how do you feel that you have done so sufficiently?
Well, I mean, here, okay, this whole question of children, I think, is a terribly important one, because the children are quite clearly much more suggestible than the average grown-up. And again, suppose that that for one reason or another all the propaganda was in the hands of one or very few agencies, you would have an extraordinarily powerful force playing on these children, who after all are going to grow up and be adults quite soon. I do think that this is not an immediate threat, but it remains a possible threat. And
you said something to the effect in your essay that the children of Europe used to be called cannon fodder, and here in the United States they are television and radio fodder.
Well, after all, you can read in the trade journals the most lyrical accounts of how necessary it is to get hold of the children, because then they will be loyal brand buyers later on.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, again, you just translate this into political terms. The dictator says they will be loyal ideology buyers when they're grown up.
We hear so much about brainwashing as used by the communists. Do you see any brainwashing other than that which we've just been talking about that is used here in the United States? Other forms of brainwashing?
Not in the form that has been used in China and in Russia, because this is essentially the application of propaganda methods, the most violent kind, to individuals. It's not a shotgun method like the advertising method. It's a way of getting hold of the person and playing both on his physiology and his psychology till he really breaks down, and then you can implant a new idea in his head. I mean, the descriptions of the methods are really blood-curdling when you read them, and not only the methods applied to political prisoners, but the methods applied, for example, to the training of the young communist administrators and missionaries. They receive an incredibly tough kind of training, which causes about 25% of them to break down or commit suicide, but produces 75% of completely one-pointed fanatics.
The question, of course, that keeps coming back to my mind is this. Obviously, politics in themselves are not evil. Television is not in itself evil. Atomic energy is not evil. And yet you seem to fear that it will be used in an evil way. Why is it that the right people will not, in your estimation, use them? Why is it that the wrong people will use these various devices and for the wrong motives?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that these are all instruments for obtaining power, and obviously the passion for power is one of the most moving passions that exist in man, and after all, this is all democracies are based on the proposition that power is very dangerous and that it's extremely important not to let any one man or any one small group have too much power for too long a time. After all, what are the British and American constitutions except devices for limiting power? And all these new devices are extremely efficient instruments for the imposition of power by small groups over larger masses.
Well, you ask this question yourself in Enemies of Freedom. I'll put your own question back to you. You ask this. In an age of accelerating overpopulation, of accelerating overorganization, and ever more efficient means of mass communication, how can we preserve the integrity and reassert the value of the human individual? You put the question. Now here's your chance to answer it, Mr. Huxley.
Well, this is obviously, first of all, it's a question of education. I think it's terribly important to insist on individual values. I mean, what is... there is a tendency, as you probably read a book by White, The Organization Man, a very interesting, valuable book, I think, where he speaks about the new type of group morality, group ethic, which speaks about the group as though the group were somehow more important than the individual. But this seems, as far as I'm concerned, to be in contradiction with what we know about the genetical makeup of human beings, that every human being is unique. And it is, of course, on this genetical basis that the whole idea of the value of freedom is based. And I think it's extremely important for us to stress this in all our educational life. And I would say it's also very important to teach people to be on their guard against the sort of verbal booby traps into which they're always being led, to analyze the kind of things that are said to them. Well, I think there is this whole educational side, and I think there are many more things that one could do to strengthen people and to make them more aware of what was being done.
You're a prophet of decentralization.
Well, yes, if this is feasible, it's one of the tragedies, it seems to me. I mean, many people have been talking about the importance of decentralization in order to give back to the voter a sense of direct power. I mean, the voter in an enormous electorate feels quite impotent and his vote seems to count for nothing. This is not true where the electorate is small and where he is dealing with a group which he can manage and understand. And if one can, as Jefferson, after all, suggested, break up the units into smaller and smaller units and so get a real self-governing democracy.
Well, that was all very well in Jefferson's day, but how can we revamp our economic system and decentralize and at the same time meet militarily and economically the tough challenge of a country like Soviet Russia?
Well, I think the answer
now,
to
this
that
is where it gets very interesting to me.
The production, industrial production, is of two kinds. I mean, there are some kinds of industrial production which obviously need the most tremendously high centralization, like the making of automobiles, for example. But there are many other kinds where you could decentralize quite easily and probably quite economically, and that you would then have this kind of decentralized life. After all, you begin to see it now if you travel through the South, this decentralized textile industry which is springing up there.
Mr. Huxley, let me ask you this quite seriously. Is freedom necessary?
As far as I'm concerned, it is, yes.
Why? Is it necessary for a productive society?
Yes, I should say it is. I mean, a genuinely productive society. I mean, I think you could produce plenty of goods without much freedom, but I think the whole sort of creative life of man is ultimately impossible without a considerable measure of individual freedom, of that initiative, creation, all these things which we value, and I think value properly, are impossible without a large measure of freedom.
Well, Mr. Huxley, take a look again at the country which is in the stance of our opponent anyway it would seem to be there, Soviet Russia. It is strong and getting stronger economically, militarily. At the same time, it's developing its art forms pretty well. It seems not unnecessarily to squelch the creative urge among its people, and yet it is not a free society.
It's not a free society, but here is something very interesting, that those members of the society, like the scientists, who are doing the creative work, are given far more freedom than anybody else. I mean, it's a privileged aristocratic society in which, provided that they don't poke their noses into political affairs, these people are given a great deal of prestige, a considerable amount of freedom, and a lot of money. I mean, this is a
now
very interesting fact about the new Soviet
anyway
Union.
We'll be back after a few words from our sponsors, where we'll be talking about a lot of things coming up with Laurie Anderson, Tom Lacabara Stewart, Resurrect the Republic.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Hi, my name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can go to rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com. This is the last 2 minutes of Aldous Huxley. I want you to hear this. This is really important stuff.
Don't poke their noses into political affairs. These people are given a great deal of prestige, a considerable amount of freedom, and a lot of money. I mean, this is a very interesting fact about the new Soviet regime. And I think what we're going to see is a people on the whole with very little freedom, but with an oligarchy on top, enjoying a considerable measure of freedom and a very high standard of living.
And the people down below, the epsilons down below,
enjoying very little.
And you think that that kind of situation can long endure?
I think it can certainly endure much longer than a situation in which everybody is kept down. Because, I mean, they can certainly get their technological and scientific results on such a basis.
Well, the next time that I talk to you then, perhaps we should investigate further the possibility of the establishment of that kind of a society, where the drones work for the queen bees up above.
Well, but yes, but I must say I still believe in democracy. If we can make the best of the creative activities of the people on top plus those of the people on the bottom, so much the better.
Mr. Huxley, I surely thank you for spending this half hour with us, and I wish you Godspeed, sir.
Thank you.
Aldous Huxley finds himself
these
days...
rather interesting. Now, Aldous Huxley, there will be in the next generation or so a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing dictatorship without tears, so to speak, producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies so that people, in fact, have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. And this seems to be the final revolution. Aldous Huxley, the Tavistock Group. And by the way, Huxley's brother, Julian, was head of the United Nations UNESCO, giving him access to the policy and planning papers drawn up in the think tanks and research institutes. Lori, I'm going to turn this over to you now. You have some stuff for us. Go ahead on.
Sure. And hi, everybody. It's so good to be with you tonight.
We had a little bit of a hiccup. That's what happens, I suppose. Sorry about that. Lori, are you with me? We lose Lori? All right, go to commercial or something, man. We need to regroup here. This is a...
It was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings as the night falls in on a rising tide. Beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe the lie. Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye. They tell us there will soon be peace, our lives will be an endless feast, but they lead us toward the dark. In the distance, sabers rattle, and the armies train for battle as the beast prepares his mark. There's an unseen hand that pulls a string and makes his little puppet
Misfits dance to any song you see. As the night rolls in on the rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse. It's time for every righteous man to step up tall, take a stand. There is so little time. For if we fear and hesitate, soon it will be too late. We're the last hope of mankind. Time hurries on, the shadows fall. The hand is writing on the wall. But even now, there's still a chance. For called by God's name, repent of sin, seek his face. He will hear and heal the land. There's an unseen hand reaching from above, and a gentle voice that beckons to the shelter of his love.
Come
home, my wayward child.
Resurrect Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Tom Lackbear Stewart, and I'm joined with by Lori Anderson. Well, that was very interesting. We just got knocked off. We apologize for the technical difficulties, but it seems like we seem to be back. Okay.
You know, this must mean we're doing something right, Tom, because over 150 files disappeared off of my computer as everything completely wiped out.
Wow, that's not cool.
Yeah. Good thing I have backup. Thank you, trolls, but I'm smart enough for that. Just saying. Good try,
yeah,
though.
Well, Resurrect the Republic was under attack for a while. They some damage got done. I lost over 100 videos. Long story, but anyway, when we relaunch, things are going to be a lot better.
Right, absolutely. And you know what, Tom? I'm not even mad at them. Let me tell you, this is the message for the trolls. I'm praying for you. God bless you. And I mean that sincerely, because you know what? All you're doing is telling me that we are exposing exactly what we need to be exposing. Thank you very much for confirming that for us. And as I was saying before they tried to wipe us out, in 2013, and this went off of what you were playing earlier, Tom, the foreignpolicy.com had did an article about the all the way back in 2013 about the U.S. repealing the propaganda ban, spreading government-made news to Americans. And
yeah.
Many people don't realize that's connected with that NDAA. It's connected with the Smith-Bunt Act, you know.
Well, if you look at individuals like Huxley, now, the reason I played him is because, you know, he's got, like, his brother who is part of UNESCO, and so he's got United Nations ties. I look at what he presented, not so much as someone who could see what was coming, mm-hmm. but more or less probably someone who was told mm-hmm. what was coming.
Right, right. And the crazy thing is individuals, a lot of individuals don't know. Our government has been really heavily propagandizing us. You remember the quote-unquote, the sequester, I'm sure, when all the shutdowns were going on, or the quote-unquote shutdown. Well, they got $650 million for media, you know, at that time. So I wanted to just, you know, remind people, look that up. Look about the Smith-Mundt Act and about the U.S. Repealing the propaganda ban and the government in the United States of America propagandizing our people. I mean, we know they do it, but many people don't realize it's linked to that. So as my my computer, I have some good news and I have some funny news, like I've been really trying to do for everybody each time I get on, because we always need a smile on our face. I really, really believe so. One of the things that I want to discuss, if I can get it, one of the things to pull up is a good news for Second Amendment supporters. And when I say Second Amendment supporters, let me be clear. The Second Amendment gives you no right to anything. All it does is limit the federal government from being able to touch your already unalienable right, the right that you were born with from the time you took your first breath. So let's make that clear. But there was a federal judge that struck down the assault weapons ban and firearm registration and upheld the open carry. And that is amazing. And to me, reading this article, it's in Breitbart.com. It was posted on October the 5th, and it says, with one fell swoop, federal judge Ramona Manglona, chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the Northern Mariana Islands, has struck down the Commonwealth of Northern Mariana Islands CNMI ban on assault weapons and firearm registration requirements while upholding the constitutionality of open carrying firearms. Now, I'm not going to go over this entire article because we have a lot to cover, but I want to tell you, Murphy, or Paul Murphy, is the individual that actually brought this to the court. He is a veteran who served honorably on active duty in Iraq and Afghanistan as a U.S. Army Ranger, and he filed the suit to vindicate his to validate his constitutional right to keep and bear arms for self-defense. Still defending the Republic, thank you, sir. And this is exactly what he challenged. He challenged, number one, the requirement that he obtain a license and register his weapons. Number two, the restrictions on how he may store his weapons at home. Number three, the ban on large capacity magazines, or LCMs. Number four, the ban on rifles in calibers above .223. Number five, the ban on assault weapons. Number six, the ban on transporting operable firearms. And number seven, the $1,000 excise tax imposed on handguns. Now, why should this be of interest to people within the continental United States? I'm going to tell you why. This is almost exact wording as the SAFE Act in New York City and New York State. So pay close attention. Mm-hmm. Mangolia ruled against the registration requirement, the ban on rifles of greater than .223 caliber, the assault, quote-unquote, assault weapons ban, and restrictions on transporting operable firearms. Her decision against the restrictions on transporting operable firearms upholds the right to carry openly. Court documents stress that the CNMI is bound by the Constitution, treaties, and laws of the United States. This means that constitutional provisions covering civil rights and liberties in the United States apply equally in CNMI, and this includes the Second Amendment. Mangolia ruled against firearm registration, which is excellent because, as you well know, I don't know if you know this, but a lot of individuals in New York know this. When you do your background check in New York, they register you in New York. So you're on a list when you do that. So the court documents, it says, Mangolia ruled against firearm registration. She ruled that CNMI's ban on rifles with calibers greater than .223 burdens the core Second Amendment right to armed self-defense and must fall. She also struck down the assault weapons ban as regards the following rifle accessories. You're going to love this, Tom, and everybody else is going to love this. Number one, pistol grips that protrude beneath the action. Number two, thumb hole stocks. Number three, folding or telescoping stocks. Number four, flare launchers. Number five, flash suppressors. Number six, forward pistol grips. And that is a quote. She explained the decision against the, quote, assault weapons ban by stressing the possibility that having forward grips and other accessories might actually make it easier to shoot a firearm more accurately, thereby limiting the danger of stray or misplaced rounds. Mangolia ruled against CNMI SAFE, and it is all capital, just like the SAFE Act in New York, SAFE gun laws that limit open carry, declaring that, quote, the Second Amendment secures a right to bear arms for self-defense in public, unquote. She observed that because SAFE completely destroys that right, It is unconstitutional regardless of the level of scrutiny applied, and the court must strike it down. She concurred with President that finds certain, quote, limitations on carry to be constitutional, but observed that being subject to limitations does not translate into being, quote, subject to elimination. I want to personally, on live air, thank this judge for doing the right thing. God bless you, ma'am.
And amen to that.
So this, of course, like I said, this is a federal judge. So as you well know, what happens, Tom, when it's been ruled by a federal judge? The other courts, what? So everybody within the continental United States, make sure you get your copy of this. Get the copy of the actual court case. Use it proudly.
Wow.
Because this is huge. Now, I want to say something. We're going to have a little bit of more amusing things. And, Tom, you know, I'm going to go there. I've got to go there. I have to go there, okay?
Oh, I knew it was coming.
You knew it was coming. The listeners know it's coming every time that I get on the show, especially once a troll hits me and tries to make sure that I don't get this out here.
All right. What you got?
So, this is what I have. First of all, most of you who are on here, we already have established, we know the difference between de jure and de facto, so make no mistake, we're not under any illusion whoever is the CEO of the United States is going to change anything. However, we're going to do some fact-checking for our people, and feel free to share this show. Share it far and wide. All right. So, first of all, earlier the week, we had a video that was produced that allegedly about Donald Trump and his use of the word of quote-unquote vulgar language. Okay, I am a female, and I'm going to tell you right now, I am under no illusion that men, when they get in there and they're talking privately, that they don't talk mess. I've heard worse language from teenagers. Okay? However,
that's the truth.
And I mean, that's the truth. It's the truth. And, you know, he didn't say that mainstream media, of course, back to that propaganda again, Tom, just like what you were saying. They were trying to twist it like he admitted to assaulting a woman. He didn't. He admitted he made a pass on a woman. She didn't go with that pass because she was a married woman. And then when you listen to the audio, you can tell that what he's talking about is the same type of females that always, they're kind of like these little cliques, groupies, like you will, that always go after the stars or go after the
Yep, never done that once in my life.
So you know what I'm talking about. I'm trying to they go after rock stars and different things like that. And that's what he was referring to. Now, am I saying it's you know what? I'm not offended by it. I'm going to tell you, I'm not. I'm not at all. And I'm going to tell you something else that's hilarious. Now, I'm going to tell you, mainstream media will never pull this up, but I'm getting ready to make everybody smile and laugh because – and this is before I pull up the debate thing, because Hillary Clinton, of course, thought during the debate that she was going to use this to completely destroy Donald Trump. Okay? This was her thing. DNC thought they had this in the bag. So Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump played things smart. He not only played things smart, he annihilated mainstream media. He sucker punched mainstream media in the face. Now let me tell you what he did, and then I'm going to give you a really neat and interesting couple of clips to listen to, because we're going to do those fact checkings. Okay? But right, what happened was Donald Trump told the media that he was going to have a pre-debate he was going to hold a pre-debate press conference, okay? So the mainstream media all swarmed there because, you know, they've got to get that story. Guess who was in the press conference when they got there?
Oh, who?
Four rape victims, three rape victims of Bill Clinton. And
I saw it.
And the lady that was the 12-year-old that Hillary Clinton personally attacked. Now, let me make this clear. Individuals with mainstream media, they want to go, but Bill Clinton's not running for president. You're absolutely right. He is not running for president. However, Hillary
Clinton... The woman is that tried to destroy the women.
Thank you. Hillary Clinton covered for Bill Clinton's actions. She not only covered for Bill Clinton's actions, she threatened these individuals. Then on top of that, let's get back to the lady who was the 12-year-old. Yes, no matter what you are accused of, you have a right to due process. I agree with that part. So with her being the attorney that was representing the guy, that was not the problem. The problem was afterwards, she was caught on audio laughing and making fun of and admitting that she knew the man was guilty, and she laughed about it. Now, that's not acceptable.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
care who you are.
That's just evil.
Right. You know, expressing and or doing your job and representing somebody is one thing. But when you laugh about it and you mock it and you make it funny, that's when it comes into character assassination.
What do you expect from the de facto lights?
Right. Well, oh, here's one better. So in the debate, Hillary Clinton wants to say, well, the whole reason, you know, basically, I guess the only thing she can come up with is the whole reason Donald Trump shouldn't be in the presidency is because he said that P word, right?
Right.
Okay. So why don't we, if you could play the very last video.
Clip.
And yes, the very last clip that I just shared. Now, here's the kicker to our audience. And this is to the liberals out there, if you're listening. And this is to the trolls that love President Obama. Because as it stands right now, if you don't think that Trump can be president because of him speaking that way, then I guess you need to take your president out, because this is out of President Obama's mouth. Would you please play that clip?
Yeah, another guy said, but I tell you what, you won't see me moving to no African jungle anytime soon. Or some goddamn desert somewhere sitting on a carpet with a bunch of Arabs. No, sir. And you won't see me stop eating no ribs either. Gotta have them ribs. And pussy, too. Don't Malcolm talk about no pussy? Now, you know that ain't gonna work.
And there you have it. He was reading before he was president, and he was reading out of something he wrote. Just saying, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Now let's do some fact checking. We will
we'll do that as soon as we get back after a few words from our sponsors. We'll be right back, folks. Resurrect Republic Radio Podcast. Gotta have some ribs, man.
Gotta have some ribs in that. You know what?
Face of the new democracy. Here in the land of the not so free.
Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.